Welcome to Why Don't We Dress for Dinner Anymore with our host, Teddy Crockman, senior style icon and beauty queen.
And Melissa Pierce, documentarian and entrepreneur and natural redhead.
Ta-da!
Welcome to our show, Why Don't We Dress for Dinner Anymore? And today we have a marvelous guest, Delphine Pompvieux. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, fantastic. I've heard every pronunciation, so it's good.
Like, yeah.
Pompvieux is the way.
Delphine Pompvieux. Now I'm going to introduce our guest to you because she has a very, very interesting and very eclectic background that I think all of you will find very fascinating. Delphine Pompvieux was born and raised in France, but is a proud global citizen and traveler. A multilingualist, she studied and lived in Spain, the Netherlands, Australia, and the U.S. before making Chicago her home in 1998. Delphine was spotted by a talent agent in Chicago who urged her to start auditioning for roles. In her first film, LOL, Laughing Out Loud, which starred Demi Moore and Miley Cyrus, Delphine played the role of a quirky French aristocrat and Joan of Arc fanatic who hosts Cyrus's character during her end-of-year school trip into Paris. Delphine continued with her acting and voiceover training, which she attributes to her increasing skills, and was cast in the horror movie Sinister 2. Now get this, Sinister 2, as a mother murdered by her child.
That's right. Sounds
very uplifting, Delphine. She also had a featured recurrent non-speaking role in the drama Empire, which I believe was filmed right here in Chicago.
It was.
Yes.
A genuine Renaissance woman, Delphine is also a scuba instructor, cave technical diver, and ocean conservationist.
That's awesome.
In addition, she's a published author of short stories, magazine articles, and the winner of 2 literary awards. In 2012, she founded Niet Jewelry, her collection of hand-designed and crafted jewelry using carefully selected hand-dyed hides, metal, gemstones, rubber, and hardware that are made to last. Delphine recently received an award for her designs by FGI Chicago. So welcome to our podcast, Delphine. We're really, really happy to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, like I said in my intro, you really seem to be truly a Renaissance woman. I mean, mm-hmm. You moved from acting to writing to diving to finally coming upon jewelry design.
Mm-hmm.
So can I ask you, after that wonderful eclectic background, you were an actress, you were scuba diving, you're a world traveler, you're a writer who received awards. How in the world, Delphine, did you finally land on jewelry design? Which, by the way, to our viewers, I want to just give Delphine a little shout out. I am wearing one of her rubber design necklaces that I just adore. I just love it because it's all rubber. And then there's just this one ring of kind of like crystals that go around the circle. I think it's just fabulous. I love it. I'm a big jewelry person. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Thank you.
So how did you land? I mean, I love your designs, but how did you land on jewelry design as your kind of career here?
Yeah. So it's actually an interesting story because, yeah, I was definitely not planning on this. Not that I was planning on being an actress either. But and so basically at the time that I had written, you mentioned that I was, doing writing and all that. I used to write a lot. And I had just published my first novel. It's an actual political thriller titled ETA, Estimated Time of Arrest. And then so that took me almost 3 years. That was a long endeavor. And it was also, of course, written in English. That's not my first language, so it's a lot more hard work.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't want anybody to read the book and be like, oh, that doesn't sound like she's from here, you know? So it was a lot of extra work. And writing is a very kind of antisocial activity, you know,
and very solitary.
Yes. And after 3 years of literally like not going out, not doing anything, because every waking hour that I had free, I would be writing.
Yeah.
I needed to do something, and something that I could show, be like, what? I started working this morning and voila, this is what I made. And funnily enough, I wanted to do something with my hands. I was done typing, done thinking. And then, so I just got this idea of, because at the time I was also diving a lot. I got this idea of making bracelets that you could, you know, my friends could wear even when they go in salt water or whatever. And it had a kind of a nautical theme. It was made with anchor shackles, which is still, if you look at my website for my leather work, which is what I used to do earlier, is very prominent. I really like that shape. And
yeah,
so I started making these bracelets that people could just wear in the ocean, not have to worry about it. And at the time, I had a very good friend of mine. I don't know if you remember that store, the Green Goddess, it was called, on Armitage. It was a big jewelry store. And anyway, so one day, like she was looking at my the bracelet I was wearing. She's like, "Well, I really like that." She's like, "I would like to try to sell it in the store." And I say, "Well, why not? Sure." So I made her a little selection. They sold very well. And so, you know, I was making a lot of them.
Yeah.
And that went on. So that was the summer. And then I think like in September, October, I was at the store and I was like checking out inventory. And then she just turned to me and she's like, "So what's for your winter collection?" I just looked at her and I was like, I don't know. And literally, I swear to you, this is how it started. Because then I was like, well, yeah, I need to do something different. But, and also we're in Chicago. We're not, you know, on an island somewhere. So I need to make something a little bit more sophisticated. And that's when I got the idea of still using that shackle, but then dressing it in leather instead of like braided materials.
Now, let me ask you something. Did you receive any kind of training to create?
Oh, that was a question too. Yeah.
No. No, not at all. Usually, like,
well, how did you know to put this stuff together like this? I mean,
you know, like the analogy that I would use, even though I'm not a mom, so I don't even know why I'm using that, but that's what my sister says. You know, when you've got a kid and then someone gives it to you and it's 4 years old and you have no idea what to do with it. And my sister always said, well, that's why they give it to you in your belly, so that, you know, you've got 1 year to figure out before you can even walk, or, you know,
yeah,
it's a process of learning, a learning process. And that's exactly what it was with me. I mean, I started literally the bracelets I was making, I was just cutting through leather. It was not stitched. It was not dyed. It was just raw. I mean, you know, but as I started making more and more, thinking of new ideas, new concept, then I bought myself a leather sewing machine. I practiced a lot, you know, I started learning how to dye leather. I took classes. You know, I mean, it all has been empirical. I mean, I've also taken classes like metalsmithing and all that. You don't invent. I mean, you need someone to teach you, and also you need a lot of equipment.
Right.
For the first years, you know, I was really working with leather, and leather is just amazing because you can just do so much with it. You really don't need too much machinery. And so that's how it started. And really, like, for example, like the necklace that you're wearing today is really, that's just like the past 2 years, you know. So it's taken me like from 2012 to now.
Right. Yeah. To kind of evolve.
Oh, yeah. I didn't just wake up one day and was like, okay, I'm going to set gemstones in some
way,
you know?
Okay. And for those of you listening and not watching, Teddy is wearing this necklace of connected black rings. Right. They are made of rubber. And then the centerpiece of those connected black rings is the rhinestone covered circle.
Right.
And it is a big and very bold necklace, which most of your designs are big and bold. Is that your style? Or as I heard you say, you wanted to design something for the city. You're like, this is Chicago. It needs to be a little more sophisticated, et cetera. So what's your thought process when you are making jewelry to sell? And then what's your own personal style?
Sure. Well, obviously, like all the jewelry I make is stuff that I would wear myself. I would never, like something that just doesn't fall right or whatever,
right.
Will never end up, you know, I would not be selling it or even giving it away either, you know.
Right.
And that's why, like, sometimes I've got customers that come to me and they say, well, I love, you know, your big gemstones, but I would like, you know, a little dainty chain. Can you make me a little dainty chain? I said, honestly, I don't do dainty. I could, but there's so many other people that do better. And to me, it's like, honestly, like, I don't know. That's not,
yeah,
you know.
Well, you to me, Delphine, I remember the first time I met you, it was for the, it was at a clothing store. I think it was Swabby. And we had that.
Very well be.
I think it was FGI. I think this was it, Delphine, unless I'm not.
Wasn't it Nitschka? Wasn't it like the behind the scenes?
No, because I wasn't at Nitschka. So you were at, it was for FGI. I know that. And I remember meeting you and I thought, wow, this woman's got a big personality. You have big jewelry on. I remember admiring your jewelry.
I do remember you at the Zet.
Because, yeah, Melissa was with us.
I remember meeting you. Yes.
I can't see you. Right. You're right. I can't see you making dainty little, like, little pendants or something like that. I mean, you have such a big personality, a big presence. The bold jewelry just seems to match your personality.
Right. I actually can't see Delphine in my mind wearing something dainty.
No.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, look, a little summer dress. Yeah. No, not unless it's with combat boots or like
or neon yellow.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Well, that being said, because you are so well traveled and lived in Europe and have lived here and done a lot of amazing things, one of the topics that we talk about on our show is, you know, why do people dress the way they do? What are the things that influence them, etc.? So if you could, how would you compare the way Europeans, overall Europeans dress compared to the way we dress in the United States? Now, I understand Europe is multiple countries and we're multiple states, you know, so in the South, people dress kind of very differently than they would in New York or LA or somewhere like that. But if you just want to generalize, you know, take Europe, take the states, how would you compare the styles?
Right. And also Delphine is very well traveled. So you've seen a lot of different styles. So it would be interesting to find out also how your style has evolved due to your travels. Due to all of this exposure you've had.
Yes. So there's one thing that is very funny because being French, there's always that this kind of reputation that precedes you, which is amazing. It's like, you just walk out of bed, you look like crap, and you're like, oh, but she's French. So it's awesome. So
I'm right.
Living in America has been amazing for that because in France, people are like, you just rolled out of bed. So, you know, a lot of people think they have this vision of French that is so sophisticated. So French manicure, never seen a French manicure in my life until
I
came
heard to that. Okay? I don't know why we named it the French manicure because there's nobody in France that wears it.
Nobody. And I saw it when I first came to the US. I thought that was the most amazing thing. So basically what I wanted to say is like, I think that there's this beautiful, glamorized vision of France, which can be that way. I'm not saying there's grandeur, there's a lot of sophistication, but on a day-to-day life, you know, we don't walk around in, you know, Yves Saint Laurent sheaths to go to work or whatever. People are just, they're more like Jane Birkin, you know, crisp white shirt, jeans, loafers, go. That's, well, at least in Paris. But it's always done, in a classy way. What I love about America is because for me, I love dressing up. I love some, you know, I mean, I don't know if you can see. It's not even like really an evening dress at all, but it still has some glitter a little bit. I just love everything that shines. I mean,
Sparkly. You're sparkly.
Yeah, sparkly. give me like, you know, I'll wear leggings like everybody else, but they'll be vinyl because they have to be interesting, you know. But what I loved actually, and what I still love about America is that people have so much more freedom to dress the way they want. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very sad that many people do not take that chance to do it, because in America is the only place where I remember, especially like when I was 19 and the first time I had a scholarship for a year. And so it was the early 90s, right? But it was still big and bold. And I remember going to clubs and there was those girls, they had like cut off little shorts with garter belts underneath. And I just felt like, oh my God, it's so like out there, so amazing. I would have never dared doing that in France, never. Like people would just like lock you up and be like, okay, get this lady out.
The fashion police would come get you.
Oh yeah, they'd be like, no. But I just thought that was amazing because these girls were just like owning their style. You know, they were like Madonna. Madonna changed everything to the 80s. She mm-hmm. was American. I don't think a French singer would have ever dressed that way. You know, mm-hmm. it's just not in our, it's not in our way of thinking because we're an old country. And there's a lot of laws and diktats and what you should do and etiquette and blah, blah, blah. And so sometimes you just feel like, and even like something like super crazy, like my parents have always been like the most supportive people for anything that I do. But I remember every time I said, oh, I'm in a movie, and my mom would be like, but you're not an actress. I'm like, doesn't matter, mom. I mean, I am now. I mean, I've got cast, I did the audition, nobody gave it to me, but I guess I am, you know? And same thing was, I did making jewelry. My mom was like, but you never studied making. I said, I will. I don't know. I do things. People like what I do. But you know, here there's this attitude of can do. Yes, I don't care. I will try, and people will give you a chance. And I think that reflects into the way that I've decided to dress. I mean, I've been here 26 years. It's a long time.
Right.
But I know that whenever I come back to France, like my friends are like, oh my God, you're so American.
Really? Like,
oh, you're so French. So I don't know. It's just too funny.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I think you put it into a very different perspective than I've heard, because we've had a couple of other guests on who've lived in, come from, you know, European countries or whatever. And I always ask them, you know, compare Europe to America. You're the first one that I've heard really kind of embrace the way we dress here in the States.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I think there is that, the French myth, like you said, where, you know, you think you go to Paris and everybody's going to be walking down the street in Chanel or Yves Saint Laurent or Dior or something like that. When I was in Paris, I was very let down because I had this over-glamorized vision of Paris. And first of all, the big mistake I made was, you know, everything's cobblestones in Europe and I'm wearing high heels.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you how many pairs of shoes and boots I ruined in Paris. And I noticed all the women were wearing flats. And I thought, well, that makes sense considering the streets that they're walking on.
Yeah.
But I was very kind of, I have to say, underwhelmed by the everyday Parisian woman that I thought was this big glamorized version of what was in my mind. And like you said, Delphine, it was really more kind of classic dressing, you know, very simple.
She mentioned Jane Birkin. Yeah.
Well, Jane Birkin was not French. She was English.
Yes, but
she was English, actually. But she embodied
the kind
of like French, like, you know, the red lip.
Yeah.
Yes.
The grandfather crisp shirt, the jeans, like the boyfriend's jeans and the loafers. And that kind of become, you know, and the sweater that's knotted around the, because that's
right.
Yeah. Or the scarf.
Yeah.
But what interests me is that you're being European.
Mm-hmm.
And you came to this country. Yes, you've been here many, many years. But like you love and appreciate the freedom that we have here to dress, where in Europe, you're saying it was more rules and regulations. We did have another European.
Because it was very story-based.
Yes.
Right? Based on the culture that is much older than our particular culture.
And they have their rules and kind of standards and kind of hierarchy of the way they're supposed to
because
dress.
Because remember, Bella was like, oh, you can't go to the grocery store dressed like a schlump because, you know,
you'll be judged.
You'll be judged and it's very disrespectful culturally, whereas we don't have that here.
Right.
One thing I do want to point out is you're like, oh, everyone here is like, oh, you're so French. You dress so French because we have this vision of what France is like. But we also do this with English accents. There are tons of research on an English accent. People just assume they're more educated.
Yeah.
But, you know, now we have Brexit. So how smart are they? But I'm sorry, you were about to make a point and I just kept running.
Oh, no.
I'm done. I'm good.
Okay. There's one thing that I wanted to say, though, however, about American style that I do not stand for is the fashion at airports. I mean, people.
Yeah.
There are so many comfortable pieces of clothing.
Think.
Do not come out in
your pajamas
with your oversized pillow. I mean, exactly where do you think you're going to put it on that seat?
It's so strange. It used to be that how you traveled is how you showed up in the world.
Well,
how you travel is how you show up in the world. And those people are traveling in their flannels. And I was like, do you show up to meetings half asleep? Is that what, like, you know, that's a picture of who you are.
Yeah.
Like when you're in a
limousine. That's something that I cannot stand. I dress for travel. I wear a nice bag. I mean, yeah, it can be comfortable, but then it can be like sneakers, you know, like some silver, something that just looks like, yes, I'm about to take a 12-hour flight, so it's not going to be fun. But you know what? There's plenty of pants or even jogging pants that are really like elevated, look nice, put together. Because all I hear at the airport, oh, it's gross. People are mean. The stewardesses are frumpy these days. I'm like, did you look at yourself? You know, I mean, you get what you read what you saw. You come dress up like you can roll out of bed. What do you expect this lady to be like, you know, a top model with the perfectly coiffed? They used to be like that, but honestly, like,
yeah.
When you look at like the level of style, these days at airports, it's
I don't know that whole over-comfortable thing. I think it started, as I recall, there was a trend. This was for young people. It was probably in the 90s or early 2000s where young people were actually wearing, especially girls, were wearing like pajama tops.
The juicy couture. That's what killed everything.
It was Vivian Westwood. She did it. We love her and she did it. And we'll never forgive her. And we love her.
What did you accuse Vivian of?
Vivian Westwood did the ripped pants. She made punk couture.
Yeah, I love
it. And like I do too. And then she made grunge couture. She was always on that.
Yeah, even in the 70s and 80s, she was even doing that.
Yeah. I think Vivian Westwood kind of made it couture, made it cool. And then we all didn't know what to do. So we kind of gave up.
Well, I think they
but no, still Vivian Westwood dressed as a bum still looks like she thought it all.
Well, that was the mistake the Americans made, right? We didn't know how to dress like a bum and look chic. We got the bum part real good though.
But I've got to say, to go back to the style, like as in Chicago, I got to tell you, when I arrived 26 years ago, it is true. There was no style in Chicago. I got there.
No. Really?
I mean, no. I thought like everybody was wearing just black coats. It still is kind of like that, but there's some color here and there, but like black coats, chambray dress, like, you know, like the potato sack dress, like you would think, like, you know, even like Little Prairie. I mean, at least they had like
like Little House on the Prairie, you know? Right?
But yeah, I thought people were dressing really, really like frumpy, beautiful woman in like dresses that just had no shape on them, and I felt very, very, very sad about it. But then within 5 years, and I arrived, it was like, I arrived in 98. So beginning of 2000, I felt, or maybe it's because also I got more involved with fashion, even though I was not working in it or whatever, but I was definitely a big purchaser of fashion. And I found, you know, Damon. And Damon had all the up-and-coming designers in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I remember those stores where literally you would have a model of dress and there would be one in each side. If you didn't buy it, that was it. And all these stores, like, that's how I met. And then there was at the time, you know, like Calvin Tran and Michelle Tan, and who else was around? Like already Swaby was around. There were so many like up and coming designers, and basically that's all I would just buy. I would never go downtown, never go to
like a department stores. Yeah,
I bought all my stuff because there was just such cool stuff that actually I had not even seen in France either. Or then it would have to be like really like high, you know, couture or whatever, which were like definitely at prices that, you know, I am not willing to pay for. But here it was available and all that. And I thought, oh my God, how fun, and fun colors and fun takes on things and crazy shoes like that Fluvox store.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's been in existence in Chicago for way over 20 years.
Yeah.
And so the style was here if you wanted to find it. I think it's just people were still in that mindset. And I'm not saying that in a bad way at all, but more like I go to TJ Maxx and I see what I can find. There's nothing wrong about TJ Maxx, but at the same time, people always put this idea that fashion costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, that has changed with, you know, lately,
which is
another terrible subject. But I feel like people, given the chance, you know, you can buy, a $200 Calvin Klein sheath for work at TJ Maxx. You could also go to that other store and buy a one-of-a-kind super cool dress for about the same amount of price, the same price, because those designers were up and coming. They were not selling their stuff at $1,000. So I feel that people have understood that, and more they just have developed their style. And maybe it's because nowadays I really hang out with like all of you, you know, wonderful people who really like make sure that they dress well. So maybe that's also my vision.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, people here really dress to the nines, but because we all do, we all enjoy it. And I feel like it makes the world more beautiful. You know, it's not vain. People have actually adorned themselves for centuries, even back in the day when, you know, there was barely fire. People wore earrings. People cut bones to make necklaces. I mean, this is something that is so part of being human.
Yeah, it's an expression. It's a self-expression. Yeah. I think one of the things that we try to point out on this podcast is that fashion is many things. It's not just, like you said, kind of an exercise in vanity. You know, how am I going to make myself look like the hottest chick in the room or whatever? It really is a form of self-expression for the designer who's designing the piece. It's a form of art. It's an artistic expression.
Well,
like I would say, you know, this piece of jewelry that I'm wearing is a piece of art.
Right.
You know,
even the person wearing it is an artistic expression.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what
how you put it on.
Right. So, I mean, dressing in and of itself is an artistic expression. And I agree with you, Delphine. A lot of the fashion mixers that we go to and things, we enjoy them so much because we all like to really express ourselves. And you'll see people really, really dressed up, or somebody really wearing something funky or kind of rock and roll looking. But everybody is really kind of bringing it. And it just elevates the mood of the room.
It does.
It's a conversation starter. You go around and you talk to people. Where'd you get that? Oh, I love your outfit. You know, it really kind of brings people together.
I feel like it's an immersive art experience, right? It is like walking into a museum where actually the pieces talk back to you and have a conversation and have a relationship.
You are exactly right. Yes. That is so true. It is a living installation.
Yeah.
Right. It is like a celebration of creativity, isn't it? Yeah. A chance to experience something new, something joyful. Mm-hmm. And that makes me excited to go to the next mixer.
We're going there to. There we are. Yeah. Are you going to be at the Curio event? The Christmas party at Curio?
I think it's the 9th.
Yeah. Are you guys going to the Swaby behind the scenes on?
No.
Of course, Swaby. This Thursday, Curio is doing the.
I have another event that I have to. Okay.
But I don't have an event, so maybe I'm going to Swaby.
Go to Swaby.
There you go.
Like three events next week. You know, it's Christmas party week.
Right.
Yeah.
And even I feel like Chicago's social calendar has become really
good.
It's
like, oh my God, I've got like three things and I haven't even.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's so
You can wear your clothes at least. You know, get sick of
it. I know. That's why I love here, or even like weddings. Go to a French wedding. Except they wear hats. I mean, there's still that thing, you know.
They do hats. Because I think that was only the English now do the hats, no?
Yeah. No, weddings.
You work on bringing a hat back.
And I used to collect hats, actually, when I was younger, when I was a teenager. But I love here, you know, you can wear a good dress. Like, it's going to be my birthday this weekend. We're going to go to a dinner. It's not even like a big thing, but I'll be damned if I'm not going to wear my sequin dress, you know, or one of them, because why not, you know?
Absolutely.
And, you know, go clubbing? Sure. Wear sequins. Why not? I mean, it's fun. We're here for a short time. Exactly. Let's just, like, shine. And then you make people happy. You make yourself happy. And then the amount of people that come to you, they're like, oh, my God, you got so much style. And then, you know, the people, they're like.
People do gravitate towards you.
Right.
Yeah. And you know what I get? It's so funny. Like you would find it interesting, because I'm sure like plenty of people say that to you. But like the other day, I was of all places, I was at Dunkin' Donuts, but I was at the hospital and I was bringing some stuff to doctors and then so I'm waiting in line, and then the lady that was like working behind the counter, she's so cute, and she's like, oh my God, she's like, you're so cool. Like the way you dress and everything. She's like, when I'm old, I hope that I'll be like you. Okay. It's a compliment. But at the same time, I'm old.
You know, people mean well when they say that.
Of course. Of course. And that's why I was like.
Backhanded compliment is always, you look so good for your age. Like, if I was another age, I wouldn't look.
Right.
You know, but I think we read too much into that. I think coming from a younger person or whatever, what they're trying to say is you're aspirational.
Oh, absolutely.
You're what they would like to become and evolve into at some point. But they say,
when I get old, I hope.
Yeah, they say it on.
Right. Also, Delphine, if you're still going clubbing, call me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love. Oh, my God. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Okay. We'll.
Yeah, we'll do it. So I heard you talk about, we have always been dressing up, you know, even our ancestors, way back when we figured out that we could use fire, we're wearing earrings or pieces of bones. So in that same vein, what is your favorite era of fashion? Do you have one?
Okay. So there's two. There's one is like the court at Versailles. I would have totally wanted to be like a little fly on the wall. That must have been like super fun, but at the same time, disgusting. Do you know that in Versailles, which is where I was born, by the way?
You were born in Versailles?
Yeah. And the hospital in Versailles is built in the buildings that were the old stables of the
king?
Palace.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah. But the thing is, like they say, okay, so in Versailles, fun little fact, there were actually 660 bathrooms.
Yeah. Wow.
And what I read is that, what the guides were telling us when you visit, they said actually in the winter, when it was so cold that people didn't want to go, like they would go behind the curtains.
No.
Yeah. So imagine and then with all these powdered wigs and all that, they say that when you say like, you know, rat's nest, that's kind of where it comes from, because there were like so much lice and crap in those wigs.
Yeah.
They took forever, you know, to be made, and they cost right. so much money and whatever. And then so animals would just burrow in there. So there were mice and all that kind of
oh,
stuff. And then the makeup was made of lead. So imagine, like, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
They were going wacky. From
yeah,
the
it was, and then the skin disease. I mean, with that said, I would have never wanted to leave at that time. But the style, though, those dresses, like, nice. I would love, like, a huge, like, you know, like, the fake.
Big shape.
Yeah. Like, in France, we call them faux cul. That means, like, fake bottoms. Mm-hmm. Like, fake ass, basically. Fake ass. Faux cul, yeah.
Oh,
because they were, like, just, like, huge. So... And then, yeah, and then all like the beautiful, like, you know, like gemstones and diamonds and all that.
Yeah.
So that's the one. And then the other one is one that actually kind of lived the end of, and I was, you know, talking about Vivienne Westwood, the punk rock era. I'm a punk rock girl.
The '70s and eighties.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was my clique when I was growing up. And I just loved the style because he was, again, also like, and when I say I kind of missed it because I was more in the 80s style, which was also right. like, you know, a normal progression, you know, like the big plastic earrings, the you know, stack bangles, the lace and all that, everything to make your parents scream, right?
Yeah.
But the actual like 70s punk rock from London style, right. I thought it was absolutely amazing. The makeup,
yeah.
the mohawk, the dyeing your hair for the first time, like in crazy colors. Nobody had seen that before. I loved it because I was a kid and I remember like going to the store and then, you know, everybody was buying postcards, you know, because that was the email of the 80s. And they had this whole series everywhere. And it was just like all these punk guys from the area, I forget where actually, Vivienne Westwood and all that, where they were hanging out. I'm not very familiar with London.
Carnaby Street.
Something like, yeah. You know, they had all their stores and that's where, you know, like Freddie Mercury was hanging out and Diva's store was there and all that. So, yeah, I thought that it was just like a great era culturally, musically, but also the style was insane. Nobody had, you know, had done that crazy.
It definitely wasn't a cookie cutter era. You know, it was definitely do your own thing, mix and match. Like you said, leather and lace, you know, the big thing.
Yeah.
The hair could be.
And then again, no cost because, you know, punk rockers were not like, you know, dressing themselves, but they would just have this knack of like tearing t-shirts, like reattaching it with safety pins or whatever, and just turning something that was like, wow.
Right. You know? I love this that you have these two polarities. One is a super rich, right?
It's
super rich, aristocratic, just excess. And then you have this other, like, I'm going to make do with whatever I have, and I'm going to make it incredible. But they're both pretty outrageous. And so I see that. I'm like, oh, I see it. It's like the glamour and the excess and like the hard edge, but the like interesting shape of your style. So I really love that.
Yeah.
You know something that's funny and that's true. My mom always say that as a joke. I don't remember it, but when I was a kid, like, you know, people say like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And literally my mom said, that's for real. I had two choices. I was like, either I'm going to be a nun, or I'm going to be a dancer at the Crazy Horse Saloon, which is...
Oh, yeah.
So you were always extreme.
You were always...
A nun or a topless dancer at the Crazy Horse.
You're like, I wherever I am, I'm going to live at the edge and push it to the center. That's
that is very true. I don't know. I just... And that's it's true. Like when you were talking about the style, like I feel just as comfortable camping on a, you know, rock climbing trip, all the way to, you know, being, you know, at Fashion Week in New York. I don't know. I just feel like all these worlds don't have to be different. You've got to be fluid enough to just find the beauty and the pleasure in all of them, you know? And
well, and that'll bring me to my last question as we wind up the podcast, Delphine. So going with your theme of you need to be fluid and kind of go with whatever your environment is, but it means you can still dress well.
Of course.
You're, like you said, rock climbing, or you're going to the most glamorous event or whatever. So One of the things that we try to figure out on this podcast is, how have we become such a casually dressed society? Now, I'm not saying anything is wrong with casual clothes. I don't want people to get that wrong. But it seems like everywhere we go, except for our little fashion circles that we run in, which, like we said, people really bring it. But for your average daily person, whether they're going to their grandmother's house for Thanksgiving, or they're going to a wedding, or they're going to a graduation, whatever the particular thing is, it seems like people are very dressed down nowadays, that you're not seeing a lot of high glam. You're not seeing...
not a lot of polish, honestly.
Not a lot of polish.
Yeah.
So what do you make of that? What side of the fence are you on? Do you love the casual all the time look? Are you a kind of casual all the time gal? Or do you think that maybe we've gone too far with the casual? I know you said about the airport, but just in life in general.
Yeah, no, I think that there's different way of doing casual. You know, you can be casual and still like be like super like, oh my God, I love your outfit. Again, that could be like a color, a texture, something. But I feel like, I mean, yeah, when you look at, say, like the styles in the 50s, even the 60s and all that, and then you look at what people are wearing now, but I think it's a cultural thing. Maybe it's twofold. Also, like, even look at in the 50s, even people that were middle class, didn't have, you know, super big amount of money, they still lived way better than people do today. I mean, I always look at things, I mean, very lucky to have, you know, some disposable income. Very many people don't have that luxury. They have a family to feed. They make very little money. Real estate is so expensive. It's hard to buy a house. So I totally get it that, you know, not everybody's got, you know, an outfit for every day or a long dress to wear for a wedding that already is going to cost them a lot of money because they have to, you know, travel there and whatever. So I think that there is really like, and it's not just in America. In Europe, it's the same. France is going into a huge crisis. The money is not there. People are struggling.
Yeah.
So of course, like the last thing on their mind is to spend even $50 on a new coat is an expense. So there is some of that, but I think there's also more likely. And the way I look at it more with the younger people is it's just a question of culture. You know, we would go out, we would go seek out people. Now you see everybody, like even like I see like young people that I you know, hang out with or either at a coffee shop or something. And they're all together. They're all sitting around, but nobody's talking. And they're actually probably talking to each other, but they're all on their phone or whatever. So there's this, why if all your life is just on your phone or, you know, and you lose that idea of I'm going to try to attract someone who maybe to talk to because I'm at a bar. Before we didn't have a phone. When you sat down and you were by yourself at a bar.
Right.
Don't tell me that you were like, oh, stay away. I mean, of course, it was always like the one that you're like, oh, no, of course, you know. But you went to the bar, not just to, you know, expecting, but that's how you made friends. That's how, you know, and I thought that it was a good thing to actually, like, you know, you sit down for a cafe, like in Paris or in Paris, France, anywhere. You sit down and then you're just by yourself. You would like, you know, light up a cigarette because back in the day, that's what you do. And then you have your coffee and then the guy next to you is kind of cute or whatever. And then he's like, do you have a light? Oh, sure, you have a light. And next thing you know, you're talking. Doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to be friends forever or whatever. But there was this thing that you wanted to make an effort. Like when I lived in Spain, my Spanish friend especially would never leave the house without a full head of makeup. Like literally they would run out of cigarettes. It was Sunday. We'd been partying until 8 a.m. in the morning. We're all like in our pajamas on the couch. And then they're like, oh, we need cigarette. And then they had to make a poll as to who was the one who was going to shower. And I said, why? And they said, because you never know. You could be meeting your husband behind the line.
Sounds like Teddy's mom.
That is true. I mean, but I said, on the other hand, that was the French in me. I said, on the other hand, one day you will see you looking like the way I'm seeing you right now on the couch. So maybe you need also, if you want true love, maybe he's going to fall for you the way you look like now.
The real you.
Right, you got to reel them in with the glamour and they stay for the real you. Right? That's the cat.
I think just to wrap it up, but I think, Delphine, you made a really good explanation for the casualization. I call it the casualization of our culture. I think that the constantly being on the phone, scrolling through social media, people's heads are so much in the phone and so much in the phone world. In other words, the representation that I have on Instagram or other content creators have on Instagram, which is just snippets of your life, right? And you're always going to show the best snippets. I'm not going to show you the garbage that's happening in my house. I'm going to show you the glamour, the whatever. And I think people are so sucked into that phone world that they've really forgotten how to communicate directly with each other.
Okay. They might not have to.
And one of the ways that we used to communicate with each other, like you said, Delphine, because, you know, you go to the bar, you thought you were going to meet some cute guy or you're going to make some friends or whatever. One of the ways to attract, like we said, conversation is by the way you dress. You know, people are attracted to you. They're going to come up to you more so than if you're just, you know, huddled in a corner somewhere wearing a black, you know, pants and a top. If you're wearing something that's kind of standing out and you look like you're standing out, people are going to approach you and talk to you. It's almost as if people are dressing now to kind of block people from talking.
Yes.
They're like, it's almost like they want to be invisible.
They're like, please, if you don't know me online, you don't know me in real life. That right. It's kind of a different thing. Yeah. You like have a digital relationship with someone before you have a physical relationship. And so it's kind of switched.
It's kind of this world where you're picking this up and you're sucked into this world.
It's only us old people that hold it this close.
I can't see. But I'm going like this. I can't even see what I'm looking at because I don't have my glasses. Now I can see.
Yeah.
No. But anyway, Oh, somebody sent me a message. Look at how fast I got sucked into that. All of a sudden, that message caught my eye and I totally went off the grid. I mean, do you see how we're kind of like almost brainwashed with these? Right.
That is, and we were not born into this.
No.
And we still managed to get like 8 hours of screen time. Like sometimes I look at my Apple phone, me like, and I'm like, there's no way. Okay, maybe that grant like emails and photos and whatever. I'm like, 8 hours. I mean, how?
What was I doing?
You don't even realize. And look at the time is passing us, Delphine. And this phone is sucking the life out of us. So I think, if anything, from our takeaway from our conversation today is maybe we all need to like put this down once in a while, especially when we're with good company, dress for good company so that you could attract actual real people that you can see and feel and talk to and hug, as opposed to there. And believe me, there's nothing wrong. Instagram, being on social media has brought so many lovely people, including
I'm on Instagram. I love scrolling Instagram, but that's not reality.
Yeah, we should get rid of social media or any of that. Believe me, I'm not. I don't believe that at all. Being a 71-year-old woman, I'm very high tech. Mm-hmm. But I think we've lost some of that intimacy that we had. One-on-one kind of things. And it has affected the way we dress.
Because now we expect ambient intimacy and it's hard to tell the difference if you were not brought into it, right? There's the ambient intimacy of getting to know everybody's little tiny
snippets,
touch points and not the whole person. This whole person is a lot harder to work with.
Right.
But I feel also more rewarding.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, Delphine, what's next for you? What are you excited about? What are you bringing into the world now?
Well,
big questions.
You can't let go. Well, I mean, I, as like for my business, maybe like, cause it's true. Like I feel we haven't spoken much about Well, I mean, we've spoken about fashion. That's the whole point, right? I'm actually right now, I'm a little bit freaking out because I just got some of my jewelry picked up for a big company that has sells like artist stuff. But it's still an old school. It's funny. It's an old school catalog company that sells art. And I think it's actually a great, they've been around for like 40 years. So, uh-huh. But it's a great thing. And I think that's still around because there's a lot of people in America. We always look at like New York, this, that. But there's a lot, the majority of people don't live in the big city where they don't necessarily have ready access to like, you know, cool stores, cool art or whatever. So this company actually bridges the gap and sells the work of artists all around the US. And then, so they still do it old school. So there's 390,000 catalogs that are coming out every so many weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have four of my pieces in their winter catalog. So we'll see. Wow. But that's my new.
What's the name of the company? What's the name?
It's called Artful Home.
Oh, okay. Artful Home. Yeah. Well, let us know when it drops so that we can.
First week of January, I think January 4th.
Okay.
And I mean, I've been working with them already. So it's not like it's brand new, but I've never been featured in their catalog.
Oh, that's
awesome. You know, on their website. I'm on their website. But I mean, just the jewelry page for necklace is probably like 76 page deep. I mean, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. Now
you're not on the first three pages.
Yeah.
So, but like a catalog that those people receive, even if you just browse through, people will see my work. And I'm just
now you're in it.
So awesome. And the thing that I love lately is that, and that's the best compliment, I think. It's not so much like selling. Yeah, selling, I don't care. I sell because, you know, I've got it.
Right. You've made a living on art. That's great.
Right. But the thing that really makes me happy is like people that wear my jewelry and they're like, oh my God, I just love it. Or I wore it to this thing and people wear it. And that's the best thing for me. It's like, it's really spreading joy because I enjoy making all that jewelry. And I just love that even like nowadays, people recognize my style. Like the other day, there was an FGI event and this lady came over and she's like, I was at Nomi. And I went to eat and I was a little early. And then, you know, they always have that gallery. And that was like the curio curated.
Yeah.
And there was a picture from the photographer, John Fromstein. And if I pronounce it properly. and that picture was a photo shoot that we did with my jewelry. And she was like, I looked at those rubber and I was like, I wonder if that's Delphine's work.
Yeah.
Sure enough, so I'm like, oh my God, like that for me makes my day, you know,
but because that's when you
now
know
I make something
it.
That people recognize.
That's when you know you've made it as an artist because you have a particular aesthetic, a particular style that's recognizable. Just like you would recognize a Picasso or you would recognize a Moreau or whatever, Modigliani.
We're going to recognize a Delphine.
We're going to recognize jewelry.
Yeah.
And so for all of our listeners, we will put Delphine's website linked down below in our description. So NYET, yet it's pronounced right, Delphine?
And her Instagram.
So if you're interested in seeing more of Delphine's beautiful jewelry pieces, you'll be able to go online and see that. I think I have two your harness necklaces. I have a leather bracelet. I have this necklace. And then I forgot to wear the rubber. I have a rubber bracelet that matches this that Delphine gave me as well.
Thank you.
Really nice.
Actually, I'm not wearing rubber, but I'm wearing like this is like some old.
I love that.
Yeah. Because
guys have big earrings. I love your big earrings.
And then see, like that's kind of already what I used to do. But like leather is really heavy. So that's about as big as I could make earrings. Now I can make them three times as big, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah. You should see the earrings that I just had on this morning. They were like down to here. I love the shoulder dusters, you know?
Yes.
Shoulder dusters.
Oh, I had a ton of those.
Fun.
Like neon.
Well, thank you so much, Delphine.
You
were a wonderful
guest. Thank you
so
much for having me. That was
so interesting.
Wonderful talk. And I love you guys. It's always so much fun to see you on and off the screen. So thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to seeing you in real life. We're going to go clubbing.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm going to dress up and we're going to have fun.
which is
yes,
amazing.
We are.
We will definitely yes, we see are. You again. Okay, bye, Delphi.
Thanks,
Delphi. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.